Hi everyone, welcome back to Privacy Week 2020. Cat content and hello, happy Halloween. It's going to be a bloody autumn here, but before that, I would like to announce some changes. Please have a look at fabland.privacyweek.at, where you'll find all the important information. We've got translations of this talk, and if you're listening to me, you've already found the correct channel. You can always ask questions. So if you have a question on the talk, just drop us the question using Twitter or Mastodon using the hashtag PW20, or use the question form on the website underneath the streaming box. And again, thank you to the great team that is making Privacy Week possible this year. It's incredible to see how many people came together to organize this event. We've got more than 40 people working on Privacy Week right now, and it's wonderful being a part of this awesome team. Thank you also to our sponsors, the Chamber of Labor in Vienna, as well as Nextlayer, who are providing us with a server space so that we can provide this stream. And for you to participate. That's awesome. Thank you to the team doing the translations as well. You're awesome. Thank you. And you help spread the news and spread the message further than German-speaking countries. Thank you. And you can always still participate. For example, you can have a look behind the scenes, and if you want to help us, you also get rewarded with an angel shirt. You can find all the information at the info desk, or you can buy some of our merch to see to hold it correctly. If you want one of those nice hoodies or t-shirts, go to privacyweek.at. All right. All other questions can also be answered on the website. If you've missed a talk and would like to rewatch it, they're available under streaming.media.ccc.de/streaming/PW20. And you'll find a relive button where most presentations are already available. And if you don't see a talk, just try again later because it takes some time to upload them. Because, as you know, everyone who works here is doing this voluntarily, and we've been doing so for many years. So we're doing the best we can with the time we have. And we've been working on it since February. Some of us even took time off work in order to be able to do this event, working at night at the kitchen table. So thank you to everyone contributing. All right, now let's start with our talk. Befitting Halloween, it's going to be about blood, bloody data, period trackers as a business models. Maybe we should give you a content warning. If you have a problems with bodily functions such as menstruation, blood, pregnancy, abortion, please do not watch this talk. So we're going to talk to Judith now. Hi, Judith. And I'm looking forward to what she's going to be telling us because we're going to be talking about what happens to the data you give to period trackers. And it's more than just scary and befitting Halloween very well. Thank you, Claudia, for your introduction. And also, I would like to thank the whole team of Privacy Week. You're doing a tremendously good job. And the topics we're talking about here are very important and very relevant to just about anyone. And I'm happy to be part of this by talking about period trackers. Period tracking apps are not for women. The golden age of menstrual surveillance is great for men, marketers, and medical companies. This is a statement by Vox Magazine, and it sums up the whole thing quite nicely, and this is why I used it as the preface for my talk, because not only for those groups, but also for other groups such as governments or anti-abortion activists, this is interesting. And sometimes those groups even overlap. So another disclaimer from me when talking about period trackers, most publications only talk about women, and I know that not only women menstruate, but and I'll try to include all genders who menstruate, but sometimes this may be difficult. At 36C3, I already did a podcast with Claudia on the topic, which you can find under datenschutz-podcast.net. And if you've listened to the podcast, you can still listen to this talk because there are updates. Well, you could think period trackers. I don't use that. I don't know anyone who uses them. So why should this interest me? Wait a minute. This talk could just be interesting to you, whether you're a partner to a menstruating person or because of personalized ads and resulting consumer decisions that may impact your purse very much. So no one should feel that they're not part of this whole thing. So let's start by looking at femtech as a business, as an industry. Femtech has discovered women as a target group and is looking for the big money. Femtech is used as a term for digitally or otherwise sold products around menstruation, such as tampons, menstruation cups, or menstruation tracker apps. So let's have a look at the market. In 2013, PayPal co-founder Max Levchin started the GLOW fertility tracker. And this made him a pioneer in the field that hadn't been discovered before, as you can see here. Since then, this market has seen a boost. In 2019, we also already had $800 million in revenue, and it's going to be about $3 billion in 2020. That is a huge sum. Again, this is just a product range of products that fall into Femtech. In 2013, we didn't have much of these products, and now we've got a whole bunch all around menstruation. More than 100 million users worldwide are using period trackers, but you will see that the top app has more than 100 million downloads, and the competitors aren't that big, but still, they have like between 5 and 10 million downloads. So you can definitely say that these seemingly harmless pastel-colored apps are tough business with a lot of money behind them. And if you have never ever thought about using a period tracker app, I'll give you an overview why it can be useful. For example, you can know when you're fertile. So if you're trying to conceive or trying not to conceive, this is a useful option to see problems such as migraines that may be hormone-induced or food allergies. Also, tracking your period can help get an understanding of your own body, empower yourself. So, for example, knowing when you'll have your period and when you'll be in pain, and knowing to organize your life around it. So, there's good uses for period trackers, and there's a misunderstanding. Period trackers are not tools for contraception. There's only one app in Germany that is certified by the German certification authority as a means of contraception. And other apps only have 7% accuracy. So, and no, in 7% of cases, there's an error. So you have an error rate of 7%. Sorry. Sorry. Seems like I've got something stuck in my throat, but I hope I'll manage. Well, Natural Cycles advertised their app as highly accurate on Facebook, but the error rate of 7% tells a different tale. 7% of persons using the app involuntarily got pregnant, and that is why Natural Cycles got in trouble with the British Advertising Council. Next, we're going to look at the working principle of tracking apps.
So usually they combine several methods of natural family planning. So this is, for example, like just measure your hormones by, or like you're measuring your temperature in the morning, looking at your cervix. and just a combination of several of those methods. So that's scientifically pretty well researched. It's not totally easy when you want to like apply this. You have to think about that and you have to do some work about it. But then it's pretty exact. So it has an index of between it. Yeah. So it's actually at all. It's a bit. So Perl index is comparable to condoms and the pill. So, of course, you can just use a more low-level version of natural family planning, which just use one method of measurement. And so the less measurements you take, the less exact it is. Of course, you can process. So many of those apps actually are nothing more than just a pink calendar. So that's it. So... there's been a new overview from researchers done this or published this year summer who looked at 200 period trackers, and of those more than 50% were just nothing more than a pink calendar, so nothing else. And it was not relevant how many data they asked. So now we check what does it cost and what's the amount of data they ask. So also like price doesn't tell you anything about quality. This is what this research from summer found. So neither the amount of data nor the price of the app actually tells you whether it's good. So now let's see which data are actually collected by those apps. So we can have a look at that. So the first. So I was pretty surprised if you look at all of them. So it's like if you want to have children, if how much alcohol you consume, when do you went to doctors, where do you live, what's your favorite haircut, which drugs do you take, what's your weight, so what's your psychological status, so what's your date of birth. So one app even ask for your favorite haircut, so you just really ask yourself, it's definitely a huge amount of data you can put into those stats, and the users maybe think that apps which want more data, that they are like more trustworthy and more functional, despite the fact that the research actually found that this is not true necessarily. So many apps actually just are a small calendar, and the data you enter there and which are asked, they may not even be integrated into this into their measurements, but you just feel better because you entered those. So, well, now let's check which data is actually transmitted and which technical means do they use. So that's pretty easy. Anything you can think of. So all of this data is transmitted, and even more of those, like a lot of metadata, like which smartphone identification number you have, screen resolution, the browser you're using, etc. So really anything you can think of is collected. The IT security blog looked at one of those, some of those apps, for example, Clue, and it turned out that after starting the application without any interaction from users, a load of data was already sent to Facebook, and additionally, another companies and ad companies especially. So Privacy International did a very big overview and study and research about this last year, and as a result some apps actually stopped doing this usage. Because they used the Facebook development software kit, Facebook SDK. So this was the reason for setting those data, because it's used often as it's freely available for developers, and helps developers to make apps and to well make their apps better. But that was just a standard configuration for that. Just sends a lot of data by default to Facebook if you don't have a look. So I as a preparation for this talk, I contacted the researcher Eva Bloom de Monte from Privacy International, Eva Bloom du Monde, and talked about this topic with her. And she says those companies only started doing something as soon as pressure was put onto them from the outside. So what she says is, yeah, make use of your right for information after the GDPR. So you can request your data from them and they have to give it to you. So at least it's some kind of, well, enhancement that some of those apps reacted. Some apps, like some apps, actually really sent everything to Facebook, not just some. Really, all the data the apps collected, sent to Facebook, not just selected data. And I don't know what you think, but in my case, there would be things which you actually only tell to your doctors, and maybe not even that in its totality. So now, let's check. So you are the product. So what happens to the data? Of course, you're the product. So it doesn't matter if you have a free or a app you paid for. The data is valuable. You may remember the beginning at this exceedingly quickly growing market, which is a darling of investors currently because there's a lot to get there. Is this data, well, as soon as this data got out, in whichever way they start, just it's just sold to advertisers, all of them, for Facebook, for example, so they can now then, depending on where you are within your menstruation cycle, they can advertise fitting products, so like either ice cream or specific menstruation products. So yeah, why? Why is it this data which is so interesting? Well, people who may become parents or will become parents will usually change their consume, so what they buy and stuff, dramatically as soon as they find it out. So if companies find out when this switch in habits occurs, they can influence those people for years possibly, and that's why this data is so valuable. So sometimes for data of pregnant people, you get 10 times more, are 10 times more valuable than data of the average person. So, okay. So I just wanted to talk about this. So what was behind, I wanted to tell you what was behind this headline. So how Target figured out a teen girl that was pregnant before her dad did. So this story is a bit older, but it illustrates very well what this happened. So in the US, a father was like, what went to the mall, Walmart, and said, what happened? Actually, his teenage daughter at high school got a letter where it says, oh, congratulations, here is ads for baby stuff. And he was like really angry because, what do you think, Walmart wants to encourage my teen girl to get a child? What actually happened? Well, Walmart knew before the father that she was pregnant. He only found out later and had to apologize for that. Well, how did they do that? Well, pregnant people usually change their buying habits drastically, and this can be tracked online and offline. And that's how Walmart found out before the father that his daughter was pregnant. Well, they've learned from that, but not in the sense that they stopped doing this, because there's too much money in this whole business, as I've already explained. But now you actively mix articles for pregnant people with stuff pregnant people with pregnant people wouldn't buy. Like, okay, you have like baby stuff, and then you have wine glasses. So it seems random, but it's actually like a new level of personalized ads. Sorry. And this can lead to the so if you use one of those apps and suddenly you forget an entry, and this can lead to suddenly you have a lot of baby stuff ads on Facebook, which can be useful for you because if you use the if you want those products anyway. However, this can be pretty problematic. It can, for example, stay if you have like a failed birth. Which can lead to severe psychological damages. So now we talked about how the ads change for the pregnant person. But of course, you have the possibility to add your partners on Facebook and also in many of those apps. So it's pretty clear who's the other part if there is a pregnancy usually. So what I thought is really interesting but rather difficult to find out was the question. So in the case of assumed pregnancy, do ads for the partner also change? Like, so for example, is it even like having like new vacation goals or like from family cars and stuff like that? So I would think that would be very interesting to research that, how far this data is huge. Does it actually stop at the partner person, or may even other people be included? So for example, if they know who are your friends, who are your grandparents, so does it change? So is it like a network which may be changed? Someone else really likes to know about that, and that's your boss. So your boss by now, there are a lot of insurance companies buy a lot of the data to this stuff. Currently, you don't have to. Usually, they give bonuses if you give them data from certain apps. Currently, usually you don't have to, but you can. And as soon you have to, as soon as enough people do that, maybe people will ask you, why don't you do? Because your right for privacy will be played out against you. So, but apart from insurance companies, also your boss may be very interested, because pregnant people are usually protected against job loss when they are pregnant. But what if you don't yet know?
Ovia is a very popular app in the US. And it's given to employees as a benefit by their employers. So the employer might even pay for the use of this app. Employers can also shop data of their employees. And it even goes further. They can shop aggregated data. And the reasoning is that companies would be better able to plan for the future and support their employees, and who wouldn't do that? And of course, they promise not to use personal data, but my estimation is that it shouldn't be too difficult for employers to figure out who's behind what ID. And as you might know, there was a huge scandal with H&M, a German clothing company that collected extensive amount of data on their employees, including private worries or problems in their marriage or whatever. So it's not that far off. And as a user, you only have to sign an extensive end-user agreement. I don't know if anyone ever read it, but I've given you an excerpt here. And in essence, you surrender all of your data. So, for example, you are granting them a royalty-free, perpetual, and irrevocable license to use, reproduce, distribute, market, whatever your data. It says that they're using de-identified, anonymized personal information. And de-identified does not mean anonymized. I think many people know this. Meanwhile, even if your name isn't part of this information, it's relatively easy to figure out who's behind the data. So I think this is shocking, personally. I don't know about you, but it's not going to get any better. As we already mentioned, you may lose your job because of that, and that would be dystopian enough, but there's more. There's other people who are interested in those data, for example, anti-abortion activists who would do anything to take the possibility to abort away from anyone and take away your right to family planning. And you're seeing the outcome of this in Poland at the moment, where thousands of women are taking the streets against the anti-abortion laws because those prohibit any abortions from taking place, even abortions of fetuses that aren't even capable of living because they lack a brain, for example. In America, in the US, it became known that authorities for immigration are using the data on, for example, children. They tracked the period of children who were raped in order to take the right to abortion away from them. But that's not enough. There's the app called FAM, which is sponsored by anti-abortion activists. And mid-2019, it had 500,000 users, and this app voluntarily spreads doubts about the use of contraception. And 25,000 users became pregnant even though they didn't want to. And they were trying to take the right to abortion away from them. So, what can you do against these horrors? Paper and pen might not be the worst alternative. Anyone who uses apps, whatever color they're in, change your advertising IDs regularly. Reflect on whether you really need personalized ads because you can deactivate them on Android, for example. Check your app's permissions Apple Health is also able to track periods nowadays. And you might think that Apple is better than Facebook or other firms, but well, it's like the choice between a rock and a hard place. So I have two products I can actually recommend, the apps Drip and Periodical, which are open source, so you can look into the code and there's no trackers. They're only working locally. There are no data forwarded to wherever, so it's just about what you would actually want. I've collected all of the links I've used and more here on Pastebin, so you can photograph or scan the QR code or use the link. Pastebin says that my content is questionable and offensive. I say definitely, you're right. So that takes me to the end of my presentation. I would like to thank you for having me and for listening to me. Thank you to Nadine, who made the plots and all that for me. So you can reach out to Nadine if you want such awesome graphics for yourselves. So now to the Q&A. Thank you, Judith. Since last year, things haven't changed for the better. Rather worse. We have several questions from the internet. You've answered one of them already. So, how do you know if an app is good?
How would you do that? Well, good in what sense? In which sense? So, like, meaning, does it work what it says that it does, or good in the sense that it's good that the data protection is good?
I think open source and no trackers are very useful here.
Yeah, so then I would really Drip or Periodical as I recommended before. Yeah.
For Drip, I know at Congress we were talking about the iOS variant that was still in construction at that time. Do we have an update here?
I haven't seen any update, but maybe someone else knows better or can build something. It would be definitely very necessary to do so. So clearly.
True, sadly. There's an interesting question regarding data security. If data of family members or friends are stated within the app, wouldn't you need their consent?
Of course you would, but you would also need that if you add anyone to WhatsApp. So, but in fact, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, especially because probably the reasoning is that it's only used privately, right?
Good question. But in general, yeah, you would have checked that and look into that more thoroughly and think about it. But I still think that I could show that as soon as you enter anything there, the chance that you don't, yet you're not able to control your data and you're not able to know what happens, very high. And that's actually what the GDPR says, that you should be able to have agency over your data. So, and in this construct of those apps, you have no chance. And the really bad thing in this, I think, is that there's no regulation for those apps, even though they have so sensitive data. So it should make a difference if this between an app which looks at your like plant at home and such an app. So that there should be differences, but in fact, it's just an economical market without regulation.
Painful enough. Another question. Are there apps that can be used offline?
Yes. So there are some apps which you can use offline, but data protection for period trackers is still not a feature. So there are some possibilities, but in many cases then you can only use part of the functionality. Those two I mentioned last, you can actually use them just on your device, but the others not.
You said earlier that people should change their advertising ID every now and again. Could you specify what that ID is and where you find it?
Well, in general, you can actually explain it as well as I can.
It's your presentation.
Yeah, okay. For this, it just makes you transparent. So it's pinned to you, and it's regularly transmitted when you visit one website from another one. So whichever ID it is, it's the one from Facebook or from Google, that either Google or Facebook know that now you visited this website and are looking at, like, I don't know, red shoes, and then they can send you ads for red shoes. So. You're nodding. I didn't actually say anything. It seems like I didn't forget anything important.
I think we should note that in the settings of your phone, you can reset that ID.
Yeah, of course, that's true. You can reset them in the settings. I think you go to settings and data protection, and under Android, it should be something similar.
But maybe your trusted search engine can help you.
Yeah, at least it's important to do this and do it regularly. Actually, it's not even important if you use period trackers or not. Use it. It's good if you reset that. And you will get surprised which apps, what rights apps want that. So why do you test the app for your plants at home? So it may use your camera, which might be useful, but why does an app for just cooking recipes want your camera?
That's true. So I think we're done with the questions from the internet, but I've got a comment from the internet which I'd like to forward to you. But you said earlier that you'll be available in the break room. So
yeah, of course. So we can afterwards just go to the breaking room and talk there. There's an incredible lot to in this topic to talk about. We could have done double the time and still wouldn't have said everything about it. So this is a very interesting topic. Yeah.
Yeah. There's still new comments and everything coming in. I got a comment. Oh, I got a question.
We're waiting for more questions. Did you know that period trackers are available for men who can try to track and surveil the menstruation cycles of their partners? Do you know that such apps exist? Yeah, they exist. Some apps which exist give you the possibility that you can share your menstruation data with your partner or like your shop clerk or your boss if you want. It seems like there's a market like with this espionage and surveillance background, so where man can have a look at that if everything is in order. And the comments in the Google Play Store, if you look at that, yeah, it's a misogynic pile of you know, you don't want to say that.
Okay.
Did the question arrive?
It's more of a note or a comment, a helpful comment on the consent question for family, friends, etc. Yeah, GDPR doesn't apply to that. And there's a tip to a data protection podcast.
A very good podcast.
So it's episode 82 about private contacts, and if that exception didn't exist, you couldn't use Google Contacts, for example.
Yeah, of course. However, still, even if you're allowed to do that, I'm still a big fan of, well, as people do it in the KS community, to ask, may I allow, am I allowed to do a bit, to take a photo of you? May I add you to this group? May I invite you? I personally think this is, it is just an insult if you don't do this, even if it's allowed by law. I can try to protect my data as good as well as I want, but when someone else just copies everything to Facebook or WhatsApp, I can't do anything about that. So data protection is not a hobby of one person, of one. It's only a team game, and so data protection is a team game, and you should consider that.
Absolutely, that's a very important comment. One more comment I would like to input here. There's still questions on the list, so you can all go to the break room and ask your questions to Judith in about 2 minutes. But there's a comment from Twitter I would like to relay. Thank you, Judith, for not only including women, but also cis women, but also other people who menstruate.
Yeah, of course, it's like that. Many apps actually address only women. So by now, there are some apps which take this into account, that there are people who are different in that regard. But in fact, most of the apps are really, like, also from the design, try to be very heteronormative. What how they call things, also the emojis. Maybe you've seen in the presentation, I really used, I tried to use no images because from those pictures, because if you look at them and of those, you just get sick if you look at those pictures with certain fruits and whatever, so no.
So one more question, just one. What do you think would be a good business model for a data-friendly app?
Who? That's a very good question, which we made. This is not answerable in 2 seconds, so please come to the breaking room and discuss, and let's discuss it there.
Yeah, sounds good. So, donation-based, open source.
Yeah, open source is never wrong. That should be done much more often, and also in other areas. In 2020, I think it showed us very painfully that we just ignored creating good and scalable solutions for Office, for video conferencing, of all this stuff. So this must be changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much.
I also thanks. Great, was a great event. Just one short note from your translators before that. You can also join this breaking room and you can ask your questions in English, even if there is no translation, but the speakers can answer in English. Yeah, and then the next talk will be in 10 minutes. So, and for now, goodbye. And Technik will have a... No, okay, the next talk is at 20:30, sorry. And it's a reading. Yeah, stream.privacyweek.at. There you can also find the breaking room, which is called Pausengespräche. You will see the link on this in the stream in a second, I suppose. And then see you there. And goodbye. And think about it. Halloween. Wear a mask. So here you see the link. So thanks for listening. This translation was done for you by...
She's okay. A pirate and DMR. Ja, hey, hat Spaß gemacht.
Ich war neugierig, ich habe einfach reingehört und zwar